Dun, 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 dun. Hello and welcome to the Pick Six Podcast. Happy New Year. This is our first podcast of the new year?
Yeah,
I believe it is. Happy New Year. Happy New Year to everybody out there. Welcome to 2019. I'm Sam McEwen along with Evan Bland here in the studio. And somewhere east of Omaha is Chris Hetty. Where are you at?
I just passed the Rhythm City Resort and Casino, if you guys have any idea where that is.
Nope.
That means nothing to me.
Where is it at?
Yep. Super, super east Iowa.
Okay.
So I have no idea. I genuinely have no idea.
You just went through Davenport or thereabouts.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I just went through Davenport. Yeah.
Do you know the song?
I'm in the middle of nowhere. That's...
Do you know the song, the Bob Seger song, that quotes East of Omaha?
I don't believe I do.
Here I am on the road again.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Turn the page. There I am in Assembly Hall. There I go. Hey, great story last night, Chris. You really did a good job. That was your best one. I mean it. And I'll say
Thank
that on
you.
The podcast. It was excellent, and I'm glad that you were there. We'll obviously be talking about Nebraska basketball on the podcast. They're in the thick of an interesting season. Lost a couple in a row that weren't as bad of losses as some fans made them out to be. And then they beat Penn State at home, which they always do. And then they got a big win over Indiana. Kicked Indiana's butt, to be honest with you, on Monday night. So we'll absolutely talk about that. And we'll kind of get sort of the temperature. They're technically halfway through their season. I think they play 30 regular season games, but, you know, we're more or less there. They're 12-4.
Yeah.
So we're technically halfway through the season. We will talk, obviously, recruiting and what's going on there. We'll talk a little Noah Pola-Gates here in just a minute because he's going to be making a decision. And I know how much fans enjoy us talking about recruiting right off the jump. So we'll absolutely talk about Noah Pola-Gates and about what else Nebraska might do in this recruiting class. They obviously just signed Dedrick Mills. I don't have a lot to say about Dedrick, but we might be able to chat and say a few words about him. So we'll delve into that. I have an interesting note about roster size for football and how Nebraska is trying to match that with gender equity numbers. Had a conversation with Gary Pepin, the track coach.
Yeah.
And that was interesting and fun, a fun thing to have done. And he had some interesting comments that are worth kind of parsing through because it's just sort of a fascinating peer into how that works. And then we'll talk a little bit about just, you know, why Nebraska's showing up in way too early top 25 and why Adrian Martinez is showing up on Heisman lists and what that all means and what we can expect from this year going forward as we cover the team. Now, they're not going to play a game for another 9 months or 8.5 months now, but this is an interest, you know, there's going to be a lot written about Nebraska football and a lot written about Adrian Martinez, perhaps more about Adrian than Nebraska over the next however many months. And we'll be writing some of it, but I think national people are going to roll through too. So we'll be talking about a lot of that stuff. Chris obviously will weigh in on basketball. Evan, you could talk maybe a little bit of baseball since you sat down.
Sure, we can tease that.
So we'll tease that a little bit. However, I'm going to start with our sponsor, who is our sponsor, and we appreciate this. It's an Allstate agent, Team Schwalbach, the Schwalbach Agency, the family-owned Allstate insurance agency with 4 licensed insurance pros saving thousands of Nebraska Husker fans money. They sell homeowner, auto, life, and flood insurance across Nebraska, and they also insure all the big boy toys. Motorcycles, boats, RVs, off-road vehicles, and I'll bet people were using those snowmobiles after the snowstorm.
Mm-hmm.
Weren't they? I went sledding.
You went sledding?
Yeah, well, my kids did,
oh,
too.
Oh, man.
I took them with me. Yeah. We went to Pioneers Park in Lincoln. You've been there.
Oh, sure, yeah.
So, Chris, in Lincoln, I don't know if you've been to Pioneers Park, but they have 2 ramps there that you go down. And then you know, they're sort of iced over. They should be iced over. And then you try to sled down this giant hill. You don't make it all the way down the hill usually. Big guy like me doesn't make it all the way down the hill. But the kids did pretty good. And it was really good weather for sledding because it wasn't too hot and it wasn't too cold, right? So it was like 30 degrees.
How was the snow, though?
It was wet, right? So it needed to be packed down for like 1 more day. But I had to go cover the women's basketball team on Sunday. So that was a little bit of a snug fit. But yeah, it was a good time. Good time. First time we've sled all year. And maybe we'll get to do it again this weekend because there's another big old snowstorm coming through. Mm-hmm. If you've had your roof replaced in the last 5 years, give Daryl Schwabach, Kyle Schwabach, Nancy Mostek, or Kyle Murdoch a call at 402-590-5200. They can help you save a bundle. Free, no obligation, insurance reviews and quotes. Let's make sure that all the Nebraska fans are properly protected. Again, their number, 402-590-5200. That's www.nebraskaallstate.com. That's the Schwalbach Agency, and now we go into a very, not truncated Pixis podcast, but I don't think we'll be here for an hour and a half. First of all, Evan, congratulations on winning. Chris, Evan won our picks contest.
Oh, this is my shock state.
Yeah. He won by 6 over me and 8 over Chris.
Limped to the finish line through the bowl season.
I made single digits. I mean, I got to chalk that up.
Yeah,
that's something.
Yeah, you started to show a little bit of wear and tear late in the game, but you plowed through it, and you were impressive in that regard, and good job on that. So we'll be having lunch at a place of your choosing, all three of us. And where would you like that to be? Have you thought about that since you've had months to think about winning?
Honestly, I didn't know that I had won. I felt like through bowl season, I was taking punches left and right, and I knew every game that I lost. You know, I didn't go back and look specifically at who picked what games, but I'm like, man, every game I picked, you guys both went the other way.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you were the scorekeeper here. I didn't get a chance to kind of follow along in real time, so I was sweating it out. I actually thought that maybe the national title game could have factored in since we didn't actually pick that game. You know, I would have gone.
You had
Alabama.
A bad New Year's Day, man.
Yeah,
you had a real bad New Year's Day. You picked Mississippi State, Penn State, Georgia, and Washington, and they all lost.
Woof.
And then you picked LSU, and they won. So. But you had a real bad New Year's Day. However, you had a wonderful New Year's Eve. You picked A&M, and you picked Oregon, and they won. And
right,
Stanford
yeah.
won. And so you beat us there. That's kind of how you caught us.
Kind of had to hold on.
Yep.
I'll just have to think of someplace expensive.
But you did terrible in the New Year's 6 games because you picked Michigan, too.
Yeah.
The rest of us did as well, though.
Well, what are you going to do?
Yeah,
it's a marathon, right?
You go to Shogun.
Yeah.
Going there for your son's birthday.
I am going there for my...
How old's your son?
My 2-year-old son.
Yeah, he's 2.
You know, it's not about video games and stuffed animals. It's about the show that they put on.
That's right. It's about having... yeah.
Yeah.
A big... yeah. Happy birthday, son.
Yeah, well, you know...
We're going to a Japanese steakhouse.
Again, I'm not quite to the point...
No,
it's
eclectic, man. I like it.
I'm not to the point in my season of life where I know what kids do, like, you know,
I'm just
young elementary school kids.
I love
kids.
The idea.
No, I know. I'm just saying, like, I grew up going to Chuck E. Cheese back in the day. I don't even know if kids still go to arcades. Chris, do you still go to arcades?
Well, I'm 25, so I'm not a kid anymore. But no, I didn't go to the arcades. There was usually like one spot in like a mall maybe when I was growing up, and it was like a big arcade place, maybe it was a bowling alley. Yeah, it was at a bowling alley. There's like arcade games at bowling alley, but no.
The people that go to arcades are people my age because we actually played in arcades when we were kids.
Yeah. I'm more of a pinball guy, like the throwback, you know, arcade bars that they have out there nowadays. Mm-hmm. Like those are great.
You're a pinball guy?
Oh, I love pinball.
That's a good game.
Yeah.
I can't segue pinball, so I'm not going to try to segue pinball, but I will talk about no pull gates. Yeah. So let's talk recruiting. Nebraska signed Dedrick Mills on Monday. That, I don't know, I don't want to say it was expected. It was expected, but of course the kid still had to sign, and he did. So they have a big running back. They have a lot of running backs on the roster, a whole ton of guys on scholarship. Dedrick Mills will be the last of that bunch. They're still bringing in John Bivens this weekend, I think, which is interesting. I don't know why. I mean, they're supposed to be. I'm not sure how many more running backs they need. If they're going to go into Frank Solich territory here pretty soon, but who knows? Anyway, Dedrick Mills signed, good player on the field. Needs to tighten things up off the field. Everybody knows about that, and he'll arrive this summer. People say, oh, no, he's arriving in the summer! Levante David arrived in the summer. Randy Gregory arrived in the summer. Stanley Jean-Baptiste arrived in the summer. Those are probably the three best junior college players they've had in the last 10 years. It ain't that big of a deal, okay? It's not. They'll be, if he can play, he can play. End of story. And I'm not trying to knock weight training and all that stuff. It matters. If a guy can play, he can play. He'll get on the field. Let's move on to Noah Pollock-Gates. He makes his decision in the middle of the night on Saturday night / Sunday morning at the Polynesian Bowl, which starts at around 11 p.m. because it's in Hawaii. And I think it starts at 11 p.m. He'll be making his decision sometime in the middle of the night. He is a really, really good football player, more of a safety / nickel in Nebraska's defense and probably a true corner. But Nebraska has been after this guy for a long time and has pursued him many, many, many different ways. Alabama probably didn't have room for him, and now he's down in Nebraska, USC, and Arizona State. Evan has kind of followed Noah Pollock-Gates' recruiting process for some time and even talked to some of his family. So I'm curious, what kind of kid is this? We don't need to talk about whether he's going to pick Nebraska. I feel pretty good about him doing that, but what kind of kid is he, and what initially turned him on to the Scurs?
Right, so he, you know, what struck me in talking with a lot of people who know him and have known him is how much family and friends mean to him. And so when schools would come along and he knew he wasn't going to go to that school, maybe they would want to work him out or whatever. They'd want to come by his high school and see how he does. What Noah Pollock-Gates would do would be bring his teammates along who he thinks maybe would have a shot with those schools. So he was always, throughout his recruiting process, he was often looking out for some other teammates along the way. I think that's kind of indicative of the kind of the way he looks out for other people. I got kind of an interesting tidbit about he and his cousin, Matthew Polomeo, who's going to be coming to Nebraska for an official visit in a couple weeks. Those two actually, for a time, shared a crib growing up because both of their moms are sisters, and Matthew Polomeo's mother would work nights, and so they would share a crib. And as they grew up, Matthew Polomeo, who's now a defensive line prospect, was significantly bigger than Noah Pollock-Gates. And so a lot of people in his family, in Noah Pollock-Gates' family, credit the way that he plays, the way he plays bigger than himself, the way he loves contact, hits hard, to kind of the lingering effect of having to overcompensate from playing with his cousin growing up all those years. So I think you kind of get an insight there into why he's as physical as he is. And yet, it's a family of Polynesian descent. That's always very important. Noah won't shy away from the reputation of being a mama's boy. Actually, if you go back and watch the All-American Bowl, when he lays out Wandale Robinson in that hit, he goes to the sideline and he taps the front of his helmet. And that's been a thing that he has had with his mom since he was a kid, that said, "I'm okay. You know, if he's going to hit as hard as he is, he has a deal with his mom. Got to tap the front of that helmet and say you're okay, or she's going to be out on the field in like 2 minutes." So I think you kind of get a sense of the family there. As we kind of mentioned earlier, his cousin is Kiana Pola, is committed to playing softball at Nebraska. She'll be there in the fall. He has another cousin who plays softball at York, just down the road. So it's not like he's just kind of coming up here all on his own. And when he came up for his official visit and in interactions with coaches since, they've really connected in a lot of ways that he hasn't with coaches and potential teammates at other schools. So that's why he's in this thing. That's why Nebraska's hanging with a school like Arizona State, which is right down the road, and why Nebraska's hanging with USC, where his cousin Troy Polamalu starred and where he also has other family ties. So Nebraska's done a great job recruiting this kid, and if they get him, he's a dude with a lot going for him aside from the football aspect.
Yeah, he has a lot of ability on the football field. I would describe him as somebody who, again, can transition from safety to nickel. I think they need a nickel. Anything that if you watch the Northwestern game, Nebraska Northwestern game, I think you go back and think about that game and go, damn, they need a nickel, because they didn't have one. They tried Aaron Williams that entire game, and it didn't really work. I know that they tried sliding Lamar Jackson inside and putting Cam Taylor outside. Cam wasn't always ready for prime time out there when he was going against X receivers or Y receivers. You know, so there's some various things that I think they had to do and to get a nickel in the system. And, you know, Doman is not what I'd call a nickel. I mean, I think he can do it, but I think he's more of a pass rusher and other things. And it's very possible he'll be the quarterback of the defense as a safety. Because remember, they have to replace all three of their top safeties, and they've got to do that with JoJo Doman, Deontay Williams, Markell Dismuke, and then C.J. Smith and Cam Jones, both of whom were hurt last year. That's the five. And then maybe Quentin Newsom. So they don't have a lot of experience there, so I assume Doman's going to become your starting safety, and quite frankly, I think he's going to be pretty good at it.
Yeah.
And I think Deontay Williams is too. So you need a nickel, and I think their nickel at this point could be, you know, somebody like Pola Gates, or maybe they slide Cam Taylor in there. Cam wasn't great in that role. He wasn't great as a corner, actually, at times last year. He did a great job on special teams, and he did get a couple of PBUs, but I think he's going to get better with an extra season under his belt. So Pola Gates is an interesting player in the system. If he were to pick Nebraska this weekend, that would send Nebraska's commit list to 25. Obviously, it's 26 with Darian Daniels, and that means they've got four spots left. And it's hard to tell exactly at this point exactly who those four are going to be. Based on that, those four open spots, Chris, what do you think would be their best option as to what kind of players to pursue? Not necessarily names, but just types of players.
Maybe another running back. That was a joke. Clearly they have a million of them.
I think so.
I was really hoping you guys were thinking to yourself, like, man, he's not paying attention at all to any recruiting. I'm like, oh, gosh. I don't know. I don't really know where they go. I mean, maybe receiver. Like, I feel like they're fine on running back. They had a million offensive linemen. They're fine defensive linemen-wise. But I think, I mean, you could maybe get one or two defensive linemen. But I feel like in terms of wide receivers, they're signing a few, and they've got a couple on the roster. But, like, I just feel like that's a position that they really loaded up on at UCF. I mean, they just had a ton of playmakers there. And I don't know. I still, for whatever reason, just feel like they're still kind of deficient there. So I guess if I'm Scott Frost, which I'm not, I would probably say I'm going to go see what the wide receiver market is like. Because even a guy like Mike Williams, like, yeah, he provides depth, and he might be pretty good. I mean, he's going to be a senior. Like, they're going to be gone. So maybe building some kind of young receiver depth, I think, could probably be a good move.
Yeah, I think receiver is a key place. You know, they've got so many pieces on offense, and yet you're just not sure how they're all going to fit together. Because pretty much everybody comes back except Stanley, but the guy that and Devine, but the two guys that left are good pieces, and especially Stanley. I think they can replace Devine Ozigbo's production. I think Stanley's going to be a tough replacement. And who do you put out there? Do you put a true freshman out there? Do you put Javon McQuitty out there, who up to now has not been able to, you know, play five or six plays in a row? So when they go no huddle, they need a guy that can understand five plays in a row, and that's not something McQuitty's been great at. Or at least that's been the scuttlebutt. Do you go with Lawrence Cager, this kid from Miami who's graduate transfer, or do you roll the dice on Charles Njoku, who just took his official visit and goes to UCLA this weekend? And that's an interesting, I mean, you were committed to Missouri. You're from New Jersey. You were committed to Missouri. Now you're going to go to either Nebraska or UCLA.
All over the place.
Yeah. Your brothers, one of whom is in the NFL, I think they both went to Miami.
Yep. One other one signed with Miami.
Obviously, Miami didn't give an offer. So, I don't know. It's an interesting... When you stack Nebraska and UCLA up, you either want to... The way I guess I frame that is you either want to go to UCLA or you don't. Have you ever been to UCLA's campus?
I have not.
Have you ever been there, Chris?
Nope.
So when you go to UCLA's campus, you know real quick that you're on one of the best campuses on the planet. And it doesn't take long. You're like, oh my God. So UCLA's campus is across the street. It's off Sunset Boulevard. And it's across the street from Bel Air, which is probably the swankiest place in the city, other than maybe Beverly Hills, but Bel Air is real, real swanky. And so it's money. Westwood, I mean, it's just money everywhere. And it's pretty amazing. So it's gorgeous. But you can also tell real quick after you go to UCLA. The weather's unbelievable. It's like 65 degrees. The trees, everything. It's awesome. But you also can tell pretty darn quick that may not be the most conducive atmosphere of football. One of the reasons that a lot of individual athletes go to these schools like UCLA and Stanford and Cal is because it's gorgeous, the education is good, and you control your own success, right? You don't have to rely on anybody else when you're a swimmer. You rely on you. I mean, you have a team, and you want them to do well, but, you know what I'm saying? That's sure. Why some of those teams are good. You know, track athletes, they want to go to USC or UCLA because the weather's good and they're outside and yeah. But it's not the most conducive atmosphere for football. That's why I don't think they've ever been that good. Because you go there and you're just like, why would anybody want to go out and smack pads for 3 hours when you're here? Like, it's unbelievable. So when you get on that campus, you either like, yeah, I got to go here. Or you're like, it's nice, but I don't want to play football here. It's not hardcore enough, if that makes sense. So we'll see what he does. And then I think corners are big spots too, and I still don't know how many outside corners they've got. I mean, they've got Lamar, they've got DiCaprio, they've got Cam Taylor and Braxton Clark. We know virtually nothing about Clark or Taylor. We know a lot about Jackson and Boodle, but they're not going to be around forever. Jackson's a senior, Boodle's a junior. So got to find some more corners, people who can come in. They swung and missed on a lot of corners, and they swung and missed on a lot of outside linebackers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the fact. So we'll see kind of how it goes from here. I don't know if they're probably going to hit their 30 that they want to hit, but I don't know the combination of players at this point. Other than I think Poli Gates will be one of the five. I don't know that the combination of players is defined yet.
Yeah, so you're talking about four other guys.
They probably have more than four guys who want to say yes, but they're not going to take seven, you know?
Right. And do you leave a spot or two open for the grad transfer market?
Yeah.
You know, they found success in that recently. And especially with the way it's going with the transfer portal and how that's suddenly becoming a thing.
Portal.
I don't know. You need an outside backer, you need a corner, you could use a receiver. But you're right, it's kind of a potpourri of prospects right now.
You loading water jugs into the back of your car there, Chris?
What?
Are you loading water jugs into the back of your car?
No, why?
It just sounded like you were loading water jugs into the back of your car.
No, I'm definitely not.
That's good.
That would be very, very dangerous.
Well, yeah. I wasn't sure if you'd stop driving. You know, maybe you had. All right, so thank you for going to Indiana. You were the only Nebraska guy there, right?
Yep.
All right. So you got some good access and wrote a really, really good story. And then your second day story is good, too, just about the bump that they can get out of this. It's interesting because Indiana's the biggest win of the season, okay? I don't think Indiana's the best team Nebraska's beaten. Honestly, watching them last night, but it's the biggest win of the season because A, it was on the road. B, Indiana has a name, and everybody knows that name. And C, it comes right before the biggest home game of the season, which is on Thursday. So as you drive back and you think about what happened at Assembly Hall, and you think about what awaits Nebraska on Thursday, this could be a pretty big week for Husker hoops.
Yeah, I think I agree with you that Indiana is their best win, but it's not the best team that they've beaten. That's a good way to put it, because I think Seton Hall might be the best team they've actually beaten, because Seton Hall is complete and they know what they are. And Indiana just have two of the best players in the Big Ten, but they don't really know what they're doing yet. Mm-hmm. It was really interesting being an Indiana man, because it is like I was driving around and went to check out the stadium earlier in the morning, and so it's like 10 o'clock. The game doesn't tip off until 6:30 local time, and there are already security guards in the parking lot making sure no one parks there. like already ready for like game day for like football. And I'm watching the, so like I obviously take it extremely seriously. And I'm watching the post-game press conference, and Archie Miller just looks baffled, and he's really frustrated, and this is their third straight loss, and it was kind of giving me flashbacks to, like, both Lenny pressers, where he was talking about, he was like, you know, we weren't ready, this and that falls on me, that's my fault, I gotta get them ready, I gotta do this, I gotta do that, and it was like, this is a football press conference for basketball school, like, this is kind of remarkable, and what was really interesting, too, was the local reaction was so violent, in terms of like fans were cursing or booing. I mean, lots of booing. And there were multiple people that wrote for Indiana newspapers about how this is a rock bottom for the year because it's Nebraska, right? And so it's just this context of this perception wise is what Nebraska looks like, you know, from as a whole. And so the thing I've been thinking about on my drive back is like, this is the year where, like, Nebraska, I think, can still, for whatever reason, still pop up on, like, they're not a surprise to coaches. They're not a surprise to a good number of players. But I think to fans in general, outside of Lincoln and Omaha, it's still like, well, yeah, we should beat Nebraska. Like, well, obviously, Indiana should beat Nebraska, even though they don't run an offense and even though they don't really – they decided they didn't really want to defend – and Watson all that much, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think these next couple games are really important because, Sam, we kind of talked about this, I think it was either before the season or the beginning of the season, of like, this is where Nebraska can kind of load up on Big Ten wins because these are some winnable games ahead. Now, Michigan State kind of its own beast, and Michigan State does a lot of things extremely well that Nebraska doesn't do well at all. And so I think that game could get really ugly. But at the same time, Nebraska's doing things that don't really make sense sometimes. I mean, they went up and beat Michigan State 2013-14 year. They probably shouldn't have won that game. But after Michigan State, you've got Rutgers and Ohio State and Wisconsin and Minnesota and Maryland and just games that, like, this is how you load up your Big Ten wins and win, kind of solidify yourself as kind of maybe – finishing fourth or fifth in the Big Ten or even higher than that. And so that's why these next, I don't know, 3 weeks are really important.
When you, the mood after the game, did it feel like a weight had been lifted or what was the, I mean, they beat Penn State, but it's almost like that win didn't mean much.
Yeah. I think the Penn State win, like, I think going into the Penn State game, they were frustrated and angry and kind of looking at themselves in the mirror of, like, what's wrong? Like, why can't we figure this out? Why am I so frustrated? And then they beat Penn State, and that kind of loosened them up a little bit of, like, oh, yeah, this is what winning is like. So then they came into Indiana, and I think that they kind of had a little – they were kind of back to normal in a way, kind of back to, like, this is who we are. This is what we do. Everything's fine. And then they beat Indiana. And this team is really interesting because they don't talk a lot of smack, but they definitely listen to smack talk from, like, opposing teams. And they definitely have a chip on their shoulder. Like, they definitely understand that people don't respect them very much. And so I think it was kind of two emotions at the same time. There was, like, just total jubilation because they beat Indiana on the road, and they know how hard road wins are. Relief because they had given up two road wins by not closing out games, and they finally did that one thing. And then a little bit of disrespect because you kind of feel it a little bit when Indiana media is asking, like, what's it mean to come into Assembly Hall and beat knockdown Indiana, like number 25 ranked Indiana. And I think the players were a little bit in the back of their mind. They're like, you know, we were ranked not so long ago too, and we've also beaten them three times here before. So, like, you know, kind of put some respect on our name. So it was kind of a mix of all of those things. I think for the coaching staff, it was a lot of relief and kind of a lot of, you know, the elephant in the room is this whole Bill Moose thing. And I think that there was some kind of, see, we know what we're doing. Nobody said that. And you know, nobody told me that or said that to each other while I was around. But I could just kind of get that sense of, like, when they walked off the court, and they beat Indiana by 15 on the road, I could sense a little bit of just them thinking to themselves, we just did that in front of our boss. I wonder if he notices, like, that we just did that, you know? Mm. So there was kind of some edge to the joy, I think, that was coming off of everybody last night. Mm.
Yeah, people, first of all, people overreacted to the road losses at Maryland and Iowa. Maryland is number 17 in the NET right now. They're 15-3, okay? At home, Maryland is 11-2. And I can't tell you who they lost to. It doesn't matter. Who cares? Iowa's 28th in the NET. These are NCAA tournament teams who are also ranked. 14-3, 10-1 at home. These weren't junky losses. They were good losses. And I think people are still having a hard time adjusting to the fact that you can have such a thing as a good loss. For example, Duke had a bad loss last night at home to a Syracuse team that isn't nearly as good as the Maryland or Iowa teams that beat Nebraska. Syracuse is 49th in the NET. And so that's hard for people to wrap their heads around because they think about the names and they think about whatever. But Nebraska is up to 10th in the NET rankings. 10th. They are a top 10 team in the tool that the NCAA tournament uses to evaluate eligible teams. They're 10th. They're like a 4 or 5 seed right now. I think it's hard for people to wrap their heads around that. It's never been like that before.
Oh, yeah. I think you're completely right. I think, and it's hard for people, I think, to, because there's a cycle of, like, if Nebraska loses, there's a cycle of destruction for Nebraska fans because their mind just starts racing. And we've talked about this a million times, but it's like there's this whole cycle of same team, or, you know, same new year, same team, same old crap, fire miles, program's never going to make it. I believe there was someone last night that tweeted, you know, what are Nebraska fans going to complain about now? Because it's, you know, a good win at Indiana. And someone commented back, well, a win at Indiana isn't an NCAA tournament win. Well, all right, if you want to continue to, like, just be upset, even though your team just had a good win, then that's okay.
Wah,
but
wah.
It is, I think you're right, that it is hard for people to understand that, like, Minnesota's good. Like, all of Nebraska's losses are teams that either are in the AP poll or are getting votes in the AP poll and are probably going to make the NCAA tournament. Like, mm-hmm. Their resume is so good that whenever they do lose, they don't drop in the NEC or Ken Palm all that much because they're losing the good team. So I think you're completely right.
They are losing to good teams.
It kind of reminds me, as a Cubs fan, what it was like before they started winning. You know, even when they had good teams, like, the culture, the fan base around them was so used to being bitten or to getting their hopes up and to have them dashed painfully. I mean, I don't know. It feels like, you know, turning that culture around is the hardest thing to do, right? And then once you kind of get on a roll within the program, once the fans start to feel it, it picks up. But it feels like, almost feels like there's some growing pains going on while this fan base that's so used to disappointment can look at these NET ratings and see, you know, some of these impressive wins that Nebraska's had. And there, you know, there's this mental adjustment that takes place. I don't know. Do you feel that, Chris, at all?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, it's Kansas State Chiefs fans. Like, I nearly bet on the Colts last week. I was so certain that they were going to, and I don't gamble. I was so certain that Chiefs were going to lose because they lose those games. And so, like, Nebraska basketball fans, it's the same way. We're like, yeah, they lose road games. Yeah, they lose. They don't make the NCAA tournament. Like, this doesn't happen. The difference, though, is, like, there's just this added element of, like, nothing matters until you win an NCAA tournament. Nothing matters whatsoever. Like, great, finish fourth in the Big Ten. Who cares? Go to NCAA tournament and win. Like, it's basically I'll believe it when I see it. So I won't get excited until they actually do what I wanted them to do 20 years ago, you know? And so I think that there's, and this isn't all Nebraska fans by any means. I mean, I know that there are a lot that are enjoying this run, but it's just, again, this interesting element of Nebraska's having an extremely good year, but for whatever reason, there are still people who don't quite believe or want to kind of buy in. I mean, I mean, I talked to Thad, our editor. I mean, he'll be like, you know, hey, I won't watch it. I'm not going to watch it. He was like, I'm not going to watch the Iowa game. Why do I want to invest any time into it? Like, they're going to lose. And so he texted me after the Indiana game and was like, well, good thing you went. And in my head, I was like, I'm going to go no matter what. Like, you know, if they lose, it's a big deal too. So it's one of those things where, like, you can't throw everything out the window in December. You can't. Like, it's not how basketball works. And again, Nebraska could go on a huge run, make the tournament, be a 3 or 4 seed, and lose the NCAA tournament, and everyone's going to say, well, nothing matters, you know? So there's still everything out in front of Nebraska right now. There's still, like, a bunch of possibilities. But, like, my advice is just enjoy the moments whenever you have them in front of you. Because the Indiana win, it was good. And this Michigan State game is really important, but it's not the end of the world. Like, if Nebraska gets boat raced, loses by 30 to Michigan State, yeah, Michigan State's that good. They're a Final Four team for sure. Texas Tech is a Final Four team, and Nebraska beat off by 18. So, like, it's not the end of the world. You just kind of have to take it game by game, or as Scott Frost would probably say, day by day.
That's right. That is what Scott would say. I agree. Ah, well. So, I don't know. I don't know if Nebraska's going to win on Thursday night, but I know it'll be a zoo. I know it'll be crazy in there. Really exciting. Fans will be jacked up. Michigan State's a physical team. They will test Nebraska's depth. And that's the biggest challenge. They don't always shoot well. There's a reason why they lose to Syracuse in the NCAA tournament, or they lose to teams that can run zone. So I think Nebraska's 1-3-1 should be interesting, because Michigan State doesn't always shoot, but they're tough and they'll bang it around and try to wear Nebraska down and wear Nebraska out. And Nebraska has historically had quite a bit of success against Michigan State. I mean, they've won some games. The team they've really struggled to beat since joining the league is Michigan. I know they beat them once last year, but it's the only time they've done it. So Michigan is the team that has traditionally challenged Nebraska the most, and I don't think it's coincidental that Michigan has also been the best team in the Big Ten since Nebraska joined it back in 2011. So that'll be an interesting game. Chris will be there. We'll have full coverage of that. We're winding down the podcast here. We don't have a lot more to say, but I want to add just a few thoughts that I had from talking to Nebraska track coach Gary Pippen, who I hadn't talked to for a while. It was a good chat, about 90 minutes long, and just some interesting nuggets in there. One of them is this, that about 3-4 years ago, Nebraska had kind of come to him, this is prior to Moose getting there, and talked to him about increasing the numbers of women on his roster in order to meet gender equity standards. So they were trying to increase the roster of the football team even then. And so they were trying to sort of up those numbers. And one of the challenges that, you know, they can run into that is, you know, they might have 70 women on the team, and they only have 18 scholarships. And so obviously they split the scholarships up. They don't generally give one scholarship to one player or one athlete, but it's notable in the sense that, you know, the way he put it is, hey, you know, there's a lot of athletes here who we have to, you know, obviously recruit against other teams. But then, you know, that's probably comprises 40, 50 athletes on the roster. But then they've got to get a bunch of walk-ons in order to match up to that 70. And here's what's really interesting. He said, for the walk-ons, we're competing just like football is with Division II, you know, with NAIA schools, Division II schools for scholarships. The difference is, and this is not a small difference, is that when you have a walk-on in football, you know, their role might be to just practice against other people for 4 years. I mean, some of the walk-ons that Nebraska's adding to the program are not going to play at Nebraska, or not play much of a role. That's reality. I mean, that's just the facts. When you have a team that's upwards of 150 players, not all of them are going to play. The challenge is that when it's in track, there's no one to practice against. You don't use somebody as a pacer or anything like that. So they have to fill out their roster with athletes. He's like, look, these are athletes that that in some cases could not compete at even the NAIA level. Like, they're not. So it's an interesting circumstance that they have to try to deal with. Because they lose athletes to schools that, you know, are NAIA or Division II track schools. And then they still have to add people to their roster, though. It's different in football. They want to add more players to the roster. In Pepin's case, they have to. They're compelled to add more athletes to their roster.
So in theory, that would play out to where the walk-ons at a track program, the chasm between the scholarship folks and the walk-on folks would be much wider
yes.
in track than it would be in football.
Well, in the sense that, yeah, I don't know. I mean, yeah, there's a pretty big chasm between some of the players that are in the football program. I think it's more the issue that, like, you know, if there's somebody on your team in football and you're just like, yeah, they don't work. You can just say, you know, see ya.
Yeah.
Goodbye. We'll instead of playing with 150, we'll play with 148. And you know what? It's not going to make much difference. In the case of some women's teams on campus, they can't cut the athletes. Like, they got to have them around. And then they got to compete and all that stuff. So it's interesting. And then, of course, they're going to have to – they may, in order to get up to this 150 football players, they may have to, you know, add – may have to cut some men's athletes from sports. Bill Moose does not want to cut a men's sport, and he doesn't want to add a women's sport. He wants to try to do the equity numbers with the existing sports. So, I thought that was interesting. Nebraska's roster right now is at 143. It's actually technically at 144 if you include Dedrick Mills, but Nebraska's most recent roster, at least the one I checked Monday or Sunday, had Jacob Weinmaster on it, and as we all know, he retired. So, if you add Mills to it, it's 143. That doesn't mean it won't change before spring ball. There might be some guys that say, I don't want to do it anymore. There might be some guys that say, yeah, I want to do it. And they, you know, make a tryout team or whatever. But they're at 143. I guess they want to get to 150. They're in winter conditioning right now. That used to be a very quiet time in college football reporting. Now it's not as quiet, right? And, like, there's some sense, like, the coaching staff has talked about Zach Duvall in a way that, like, he is such an integral part of how they're going to develop this football program that you're almost kind of, like, wondering what's going on over there right now? Well, they're lifting weights and they're running. The things that they've long been doing. So, I don't want to downplay it at all. It's obviously enormously important, and Nebraska obviously has to reshape bodies. But this is something that is done annually and has been the story within Husker football for a long time. So rest assured, they're getting muscle, losing weight, getting back in shape, and getting ready for spring football, which starts sometime in March.
That's true. So you're not too enthused about the winter conditioning.
Oh, I find it really interesting, but it has literally been going on in football for decades on end. And so, although I think Duvall can make a difference, it's not really a story that they're lifting weights. That's not a story. They always do.
It's become kind of like a folk. He's become like a folk hero. Like, Zach Duvall will get him right. Zach Duvall, you know what I mean?
And like,
I mean,
there's
he's good at his job, clearly. Like, you saw the difference.
Yeah,
but
you did.
There is a certain sense of, like, any, like, won't talk to media. And so there is this certain, like, ambiguity of, like, oh, what's this magic trick? And, like, who is this, you know, hero behind the scenes? It's a good point. Like, they do a good job, obviously. But, yeah, they're just picking up things and putting them back down and then running.
Well, and those are all important things. But we'll have to – the more important issue is to measure the gains at the end of it.
Right. The story is just getting started.
Yeah.
The story isn't what they're doing today. The story is, what does this look like in the fall?
Well, yeah.
And longer term.
You know, how much better can they, you know, like, yeah, they'll get better and then they'll get better and better and better and so on and so forth. But, you know, like, it's not. I just don't want people to think that, like, every team you know, every team's got a strength and conditioning coordinator. I guess that's my point. And I think Nebraska's got a better one than most, but everybody's doing work, you know?
Sure. But, you know, I would argue that in college football today, with the playing field evening out in so many ways, scholarships, games that are on that are televised now, mm-hmm. you know, all the old edges Nebraska used to have kind of eroded over time. Strength and conditioning was certainly one of those in the last few years. You know, you look at, I just think it's a fascinating ongoing story about how they could maybe reclaim some kind of an edge, whether that's staying healthy, as I thought anecdotally last year they did a much better job of than 2017. And you could say, you know, they didn't report the injuries as extensively as Riley. And that's certainly true.
So we don't know.
But again, anecdotally, it felt like, you know, the guys weren't cramping up. Guys weren't limping off the field nearly as much as 2 years ago.
Sure.
So I think that's interesting. And then again, you see Iowa every year at the end of the year, and you see what those guys have become in that program after 4 or 5 years. I mean, they crank out some dudes.
They do. And Chris Doyle is the highest paid strength coach for a reason.
And you just don't, we haven't seen those kind of dudes at Nebraska in a long time. And so, no. Yeah, in general, you know, I think that's fair to say. And so, yeah, I mean, if you have the recruiting advantage that Nebraska often does in terms of stars and skill position, and you want to pair that with stronger development, if you can develop like Iowa develops and continue to recruit at roughly the level that they are now, I mean, then you're starting to talk about some interesting things.
Yeah, and he's doing a good job. I don't think, I think they have a better strength coach now. I mean, based on the feedback that I've received, I think they have a better strength coach than his predecessor. Okay, I don't want to dog James Dobson. I think he did a pretty good job, and I think the players generally respected him. I think they liked Mark Phillip, but I think Zach Duvall is on a whole different level. And then Darian Daniels sent out that tweet. I don't know if you saw it, about how they lift at Nebraska. Obviously, he was making a commentary not only on, he's making a commentary on Nebraska, but he was also making commentary simultaneously on Oklahoma State.
Yeah, I believe he deleted that tweet since then. Yeah.
So it was impressive, right? So, like, obviously they're doing work at Nebraska that they didn't used to do, and that's notable. But the big story is going to be how these guys look in the spring and then how they look in the fall. You know, how they go about it, that's Duvall's secret sauce. He doesn't talk about it. He doesn't do interviews. He just doesn't talk much about it. It's like his – and I don't – you know, like, I kind of understand that. It's kind of their formula. It's his thing, you know? I'd love for him to talk to us and tell us all of the secrets, but you kind of get the sense that's his secret. That's part of his deal. Like, he's, you know, he doesn't want everybody to know everything he does, because then that would they lose the edge.
Sure. I mean, some of the Husker Power principles are out there. Those, even some of those obvious things that they have changed have come about. But yeah, I mean, some of the smaller things, how precise they track everything from a player's adrenaline, you know, count, to how much sleep they get, to the consistency of their saliva, which indicates stress. Like, there's so many things that they are going about, and I'm sure there are things we don't know that they're doing too. Absolutely, it makes sense that they wouldn't divulge all of that.
Nope, secret sauce. I think it's a little bit of how they do it. And they did look better against Iowa. I don't know if they looked that much different against Wisconsin, but they did look better against Iowa than they did the previous 2 years, when they got their butts kicked all over the field. I didn't think they got their butts kicked all over the field against Iowa. I think they got moved around, but I don't think they were humiliated.
Yeah, I felt like they made up for some of the lack of strength through scheme and through other ways. But they're not on Iowa's level yet, and Frost said as much after the game.
He did.
But I agree, they're closing the gap.
All right. That's going to be all this week for our Pick 6 podcast. Chris, drive home safely. And get home safely. Might want to stop for a meal sometime around 5 o'clock, maybe in Des Moines. And
okay, I will.
Happy birthday, Evan. It was your birthday over the weekend?
Yeah, the big 3-3.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
You're not going to have a two-number birthday until you're 44.
That's deep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you also won't have a birthday, I believe, that's divisible by 11 until then again, too.
Something to look forward to.
Yeah. It is pretty cool. Congratulations on that. Happy birthday to your son as well.
Thanks.
Happy birthday to anybody out there who has a birthday who's listening. We appreciate you listening on your birthday. If you did listen on your birthday, go ahead and send us just a note to let us know that we accompanied your birthday.
Yeah, happy birthday to you.
No Paul Gates making his announcement in the middle of the night on Saturday night. I think he's going to pick Nebraska, but we'll find out. Thanks, everybody. Have a great week.